You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
All right, welcome to the Belief in the Magic podcast, as presented by LastWordOnSports.com, where you get the last word. So we're back at it again today. Tonight is the last game of the Stanley Cup final, so naturally we'll start talking about Zaitsev and Marleau instead. The trade, we haven't actually had a podcast since the trade rumors were announced for Marleau and Zaitsev, which are huge. Prior to this, leading up to this offseason, the big thing was, can they even do it? Can they even trade them? Marleau has a full no-movement clause. If he doesn't want to go, he doesn't have to, and they're huge contracts. No one's going to take them, and they're going to be in cap hell. Well, now they... It seems actually extremely doable and more than likely now.
I'm actually pretty happy. If you think about it, with Nikita Zaitsev, he's a right-handed shooting defenseman that's played top 4 minutes. He might not be great, but he might not be bad. And in any other market, his contract, 7 years at 4.5 per year, is not actually that bad. It might be a little bit on the higher side, but I think a lot of teams would be comfortable with his salary, especially if he can improve certain areas of his game. He doesn't have to be a top defenseman by any means. He just needs to be solid and somewhat reliable.
Yeah, and I know a lot of Toronto media recently, since the rumors have started, sort of hyping him up a little more. Don't get me wrong, I still don't think he is a good defenseman myself. However, I think... used in a more offensive role, second power play unit kind of stuff, on a team that really needs that, he could be serviceable at very least. You want to start him in the offensive zone. You don't want him to be breaking your team out of the defensive zone. So there is still some issues with him, but I think if a team trades for him and utilizes him properly in sheltered minutes, power play role, he could be okay.
I'm totally with you on that, because I think he's a good... Because obviously you're not going to pay that much for him. You're probably... The whole thing, you're doing Toronto a favor by taking on his contract, so Toronto's not going to ask for much in return. But I think, you can get him for a fair price and... it's worth a shot. It's just, like you said, you got to use him in the right role, give him second power play unit time, give him more of an offensive position. And I think, maybe under a different coach, maybe he can get what he needs in terms of ice time and be used in a role that suits him best. So I'm interested to see how much he'll fetch and who will take him.
Yeah, and as for Marleau, it's come out that apparently his family did not adjust to Toronto well, and they wanted to go back to San Jose. I think someone's even reported that they've already moved back and are anticipating a Marleau trade. That's why he's looking at Arizona or LA. Not because he thinks he has a chance to win there. He wouldn't, in theory, unless there's some magical turnaround in either of those teams. It's just to be closer to his family. And don't get me wrong, I think Arizona might be a playoff team next year, especially in the Pacific, but I don't think anyone's calling them cup contenders. So Marleau offloading, I think a lot of people are saying that Zaitsev has a negative value, meaning that the Leafs will have to give up something for someone to take him. I don't think that's the case for Zaitsev. I think that's maybe the case for Marleau. But honestly, if they don't think they can sign Andreas, one of Andreas Janssen or Kasperi Kapanen, Janssen most likely, I think. Maybe they just give the team his rights to take on Marleau.
That might be a smart idea. And it's the premium asset they're talking about. Like, I read some retorts and heard some retorts from people like Nick Kyprios and guys that aren't named Bob McKenzie, that maybe that Trinian asset could be Jeremy Draco or a player like that. I don't know if I like that idea because I'm not extremely high on Draco, but I think he has a higher ceiling than most think. I don't think he's going to be a top six bowler, but if he could be serviceable on the third line, I think
he'll be a middle six guy. Like, I think that's what you can expect from him at this point. He was a second round pick back in 2015, the Marner draft, and he broke records or tied records in the USHL, I believe it was, like with Phil Kessel and Patrick Kane. Albeit, I think he was maybe almost a year older at that point. But, yeah, he had a really good AHL season. But I don't think the Leafs will give him the opportunity to be as good as he needs to be. He's fantastic on the power play, but he's not going to get top power play minutes, especially on this team, and especially with McFarland coming in as the assistant coach and running the power play. He has, in Florida, gave the top power play unit like a minute 30 a night. And especially when the Leafs top load their power play like that, he's not going to get a lot of time to shine there. And I think his value is going to be the highest it is right now. So if you get something back for him, unloading Marlow, like whether it's getting a Colin Miller back where Vegas can use some cap relief because they still need to re-sign William Karlsson, and they need to apparently are looking to unload Colin Miller, who's making a hair under four, who's a great defenseman. Whether you do either of those things, I think it's great.
I can see it. If they was getting Colin Miller, I could live with it, but giving up Patrick Marleau, I don't know. See, that's the thing. But I understand the move behind it, and I understand that you're going to have to give something to get something, and that cap space can be a lot more useful than Jeremy Draco, like you were saying, because he's probably not going to get his shot, and if you wait any longer, his value is going to go down, and good Lord, nobody wants value to go down. I'm just hoping that it can be used to get a defenseman, not get rid of Marlow. Because his contract's only one more year, and a team like Arizona, where they're barely going to be over the salary cap floor, it's like, why the hell can't they do it? But then again, they have all the leverage because they're taking on the contract, right? So,
And I don't think saying it's only one more year is really fair. It's in the most important year, with Matthews' extension kicking in next year and a potential new Marner contract on the horizon. They do need this. It's only 1 year, but it's the most important year.
Yeah. But what I mean by that is, like, it's only 1 year for Arizona to take on, or, like, a team like that. So, like, I always think, why be so anal about it? Like, get the leverage thing. But it's just, like, you know what I mean? Do Toronto a favor now, and maybe they do you a favor later on.
I'm not too big on teams doing favors. I don't think they do it for favors. Like, if Arizona really wanted to hit the cap floor, they could just go out and overpay one guy for 1 year. Like, it's like some guy that's going to make $3 million, give him six for one. And then you don't even have to, like, make the trade, and you're still in the same position.
Exactly.
You do need to give up that asset, whether it is Jeremy Bracco or Andreas Janssen, or maybe like even Mac Hollowell, who I know might be an overager and when he was drafted, but he's been looking quite good in the OHL, and I think he played a couple games in the AHL this year, this playoffs. But obviously, non-NHLer, like, not predicted to be on an NHL roster next year like Bracco or Janssen are, so obviously has a little less value.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of, it's a stinger in a way. That said, though, like, I could live with giving up Janssen if you know he's not resigning. That I could live with, for sure.
Yeah. And like I said, for Zaitsev, though, I don't think he has a negative value. I think teams are still, I don't want to say dumb enough, but dumb enough that they see value in his type of player and the way he plays and don't think it's that outrageous of a contract because it's 5 years left at $4.5 million. Cap keeps going up. It's still an overpayment, but like, it's serviceable if he is serviceable. It's not a good contract, but if he can do what he did in his rookie year, 36 points, maybe even a couple more if they're giving him like more power play time in somewhere like LA that needs offense, then it's okay, I guess. But I do think teams still see value with him.
Yeah, I'm with you there. And, like, obviously, it's not a lot of value, but there's still value if you play your cards right. So, I'm excited to see what happens. And, honestly, I think Zaitsev has the potential to be a good offensive defenseman put in the right situation. Right now, I just feel he's been overused because of, you know, the position Toronto's in with their defensemen. So, you know.
Yeah, and if they do trade him, that will leave a hole on defense, especially if they don't re-sign Hainsey, which it sounds like they might, but I really don't think they should either way. It is good to get that out. It does leave a hole. I don't think it's that big a deal. It's like as opposed to what? Someone who hurts the team when he's on the ice, but they do need a body to fill that. So, like, looking at the TSN trade bait, a couple guys that jumped out, it's like Colin Miller, as we've already talked about, Jacob Trouba, who Sean Avery said the Leafs already traded for. So,
Najin Kadri.
Travis Hamonic, apparently Calgary's looking to deal him just 2 years after he's joined the team. And the most shocking to me is Shane Gostisbehere. Now, Gostisbehere is left-handed, so, like, take that as you will, but the Leafs haven't had right-handed guys in the past. It has been fine. I'm not sure if it's, like, we've gone too far looking at handedness with defensemen, because it does actually impact the shot attempt differential. But I don't know if we almost like it needs to be a right hand guy on a right hand side. Because Shane Gostisbehere is like a legitimate number two defenseman. Had what was it like 60 something points, not this past season, but the one before 2017-18.
Mm-hmm.
And like is positive Corsi Rail on his. On the Flyers, fantastic player, just all around, like great at the shot contributions and entry and exits and entry defense, like great all around there. Evolving hockey, I think, provides like at least positive wins above replacement according to their model. And his heat maps look great in his own zone. I think he's a fantastic defenseman. And the fact that Philly's trying to trade him is ridiculous to me. But that said, Chuck Fletcher's also not the greatest GM. So
connect the dots.
Yeah.
William Nylander for Shane Gostis there. That's a great straight up trade for me.
Oh, I wouldn't do that. I'd keep Nylander before that. I'd do Kadri.
I don't know.
Nylander's way more valuable to the team than Kadri is.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll go to war over this.
I'm sure you will.
Yeah, I'm a huge Nylander supporter. I think he just had a rough season, like bad puck luck.
Mm-hmm.
All his underlying numbers were there. And even for a stretch there in February, he was the best player on the team. I think he had like almost a point per game over 25 games
mm-hmm.
when the Leafs were actually just really struggling. So, I do even like we were talking about AJ and Bracco or someone like that. Like there's assets in the minors. Mm-hmm. It would really clear out the cupboards, but as a competitive team, you kind of need to do that at some points and then just restock.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know, I guess I always thought Gostis there would bring a really high price if you're going to trade him. You're not going to trade a defenseman like that, like a number two defenseman away for nothing.
Yeah, but apparently, I don't know how Philly sees this as a problem, but they have too many good young defensemen that are mobile, so I guess they have to trade one of them.
That's a very bad ideology.
Yeah, the fucking logic. I don't know how they came to that conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
I'd kill for too many young mobile defensemen.
Same here.
And like Gostis Bear is cost controlled. He's like, I think he's 26 right now. Like we've been over, he's quite good. And Hamonic and Trouba are probably a little lower on my list. I think Hamonic's fine. Decent contract for, I think, maybe a year left. Trouba I would not go for just right now because I don't think Toronto needs another RFA that's predicted to have a tough negotiation.
No, I'm with you 100%.
And, yeah, like, I think Miller is the way to go if you can get, I think you can get a reasonable price. He's apparently being shopped at the deadline. Vegas needs the cap space. Same with how Toronto needs defensemen. And I think Bracco going the other way would be fine. He would provide them with a cheap player because I think Bracco needs to re-sign this year as well.
Mm-hmm.
And only being in the AHL, he's not getting over $1 million, but will still likely be on an NHL roster, and the Leafs get a stable right-handed defenseman in return. Yeah, I think that's either of those two are great targets for the Leafs.
Yeah,
and especially if they can unload Marlo Zaitsev and Connor Brown, who's apparently seen as a valuable asset. Like Edmonton was pushing hard for him at the deadline.
I was surprised to hear that, but then again, it's Edmonton, so
yeah. And like if anyone can turn him into a player, it's Connor McDavid. They played together in Erie. Connor Brown was his captain.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but again, they're looking for wingers just in general, so I don't know.
It's something to consider, especially if they give you an asset you could use in another deal or just cap relief, because I don't mean this in a mean way, but Brown is easily replaceable.
Yeah, especially for when he's at over $2 million. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, we can get your quality of player for under $1 million, i.e. Tyler Ennis last year, who I don't think they'll be bringing back, but if they do, great. If not, no big deal. It was a one-year flyer. They got production out of him. Great. Yeah, there's always that kind of player, like Chyson. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Edmonton last year. Yeah. On Edmonton last year, had 20 goals. He was in the same sort of situation as Ennis. Yeah, I think it's an easy role to fill.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So I wouldn't be opposed. As long as you get something decent, you just don't want to give them away unless you really need that cap space.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that because if they deal Zaitsev, Marleau, and Connor Brown, that is what? So,
okay, so
nearly $13 million in cap space?
Yeah, 12.75, something like that.
Yeah, it's like 2.1 for Brown, I think.
Yeah, 2.1,
so
7.5 for, or not, 4.5 for Zaitsev, and 6 point something for Marleau.
6.25, yeah. And
yeah.
And obviously, first thing on the bill is to sign Marner, or at least figure out what you're doing with Marner.
Yeah. Good Lord, I hope he signs for their price. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, like I recently wrote an article talking about best and worst case scenarios for a Marner. Best case scenarios, signs at a reasonable price where the player gets a fair value and also doesn't shaft the team. Like, for these negotiations, I'm almost always on the player's side.
Mm-hmm.
I think, like, go make your money. Like, this is your chance in your career to make the cash that you deserve. And, yeah, it's time for you to do that. But also, $11 million is ridiculous for Mitch Marner.
I agree.
So, like, I think the best case scenarios are he signs for a reasonable contract, like $9.5 million, $9.7 million. Pardon me. Or he gets offer sheeted and they get the four firsts. I think those are the best case scenarios.
Yeah. And I wouldn't mind having those four first round draft picks because, you know, my theory is, and I stick to it, is you're going to have a bottom, like, 13 coming and making an offer sheet for them because those are the only teams that have the salary cap and the assets to get it done. So, even with Marner, in theory, you could almost say it's going to be a lottery pick in 2020. Yeah,
and then they'll have their first still and somebody else's first. And they could just go right around and offer sheet someone else. Like, Marner gets offer sheeted. All right, goodbye, Marner. Hey, Matthew Tkachuk, what are you up to?
Yeah.
And offer sheet him for, I don't know, I think Matthew Tkachuk's looking for 9, which is a little bit pricey. That's what I'd want Marner at. However, you know, I'm not GM. I'm not figuring this all out. So, but yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, as we were saying earlier, tonight's the Game 7 Stanley Cup Final. Last time that happened, Boston was playing in it as well, and riots happened. So,
let's not have that happen this time.
Yeah. What? With it happening tonight, what is your final prediction for Game 7? One game, winner takes all. Who do you think wins?
I'm going to go Boston. It'll be 5-4 in overtime. It's going to be a tight game. What is your prediction?
I also think Boston. I think Boston's going to win it handedly. But, yeah, I think, and by the time everyone's listening to this, we'll probably know who won and whether we're correct or St. Louis won. I'm personally rooting for St. Louis, but
same here.
Yeah, I think Boston will win as well. I think they've just been extremely good this entire playoffs. Rask has been nuts. Rask has been like possibly the well, like likely the Conn Smythe favorite. People are even calling for him to win it, even if St. Louis wins, which has only happened, I think, 5 times ever. And last time was Jaguar in 03 with the Mighty Ducks.
Wow, that's a flashback.
But yeah, so Boston could take it for the second time in recent memory. second time in my lifetime. I don't remember the time that they won it before that.
Me neither. We weren't conceded yet, let's put it that way.
And what was it? Yeah, 72 would have been the last time.
I think our parents would have been pretty well toddlers.
Yeah.
Pretty young. So.
And yeah, I hope St. Louis wins. I'd prefer not to see Boston win it, but.
Yeah. Because, like they say in, Game of Thrones, what is dead may never die, and Toronto's, memory of this playoff season may never die, if that's the case. Because I guarantee you, if it's not Boston, it's Toronto there.
Yeah, it's not even that I'm bitter about Boston, which, don't get me wrong, I am. I just prefer seeing, like, new teams win the cup. If the Leafs aren't in the finals, I'd be rooting for a new team to win it all. And then if both teams have won it, then I just, I don't know, pick my favorite team.
Yeah, exactly.
Whoever I prefer. But I would love to see St. Louis win it and, I don't know, win it over Boston.
Yeah.
Like, old school St. Louis fans would love that. Doesn't mean much to people our age, but it would be nice to see.
Yeah, it would be. And I think you might see it. So I just like Boston. They're at home, and it's a tall task for St. Louis. Very tall task.
And Stanley Cup Final isn't the only finals going on right now. Raptors just lost in Game 5 the other night. 106 to 107, I believe the score was.
106 to 105.
106 to 105?
Yeah.
Yeah, 1-point game. And so close. It's really tough to see that they lost that game, but it would have been great to win it in Toronto.
Would have been
the first major championship here since 93 when the Blue Jays won it. And don't come at me saying Argos, FC, Marlies. It's not the same level as MLB, NBA, NHL.
Yeah, because those are the major trio. But the one thing I will say about this, if they win tomorrow night, which will be Thursday, and by the time this gets out, the game's probably over. I'm going to say, I think that's a bigger accomplishment than winning it at home, because you're facing Golden State. Like, basically, today's version of the Michael Jordan's Chicago Bulls. They're a really good team, and I think they've been there like 5 times and they won 3 or something like that. So it's a big deal. And when you win 3 games at Oracle on their own home court, you know what? Yeah, they didn't have Kevin Durant for the vast majority of the series. And yeah, they might have been a little bit banged up in terms of injuries. But it's a big deal regardless of who's on the court to beat Golden State at home 3 times, and I think that's something that, you know, really solidifies how good this Raptors team is, win, lose, or tie.
Yeah, and this was tweeted out yesterday. So The NBA says there is an incorrect no call with 49 seconds left in last night's game. So referring to the game on the 10th. Last two-minute report says officials should have put Marc Gasol on the line for two shots after being fouled by DeMarcus Cousins on a drive. And then he comments on it. Kind of a big deal in a one-point game. So, yeah, that could have been game-changing if they had actually called that what turned out to be a pretty important non-call.
Yeah, but I've always said this from the start. I don't like refing in the NBA. I never liked it, and this isn't just with Toronto games. Like, if you watch some of the games, like you had Boston against Milwaukee, there were some terrible calls in that series and then terrible no calls, and I really don't like that. And I can see why they may have let it go, but they're calling everything on Toronto. You have to call that on Golden State. And like you said, it was pretty well game-changing if they would have had that call. Even if Gasol would have sunk one shot, it's a tie game. It changes that last 15 seconds of the game. Because instead of, you know, having to make a shot to win, they could have just tried to, you know, take it to the paint and draw a foul. It totally would have changed the game plan.
And, like, there's always going to be human error in reffing when it's reffed by people. That's to be expected. And this has been an issue in the NHL as well. It's like, I think I don't pay enough attention to basketball to know how much of an issue this is. But in the NHL, it's just like, commit to either having human error or commit to reviewing. Don't do both. Both doesn't work. I'm one for human error. I don't think the NHL should be reviewing everything every 5 minutes. But it seems like they're gonna start to review more after the NHL-NHLPA meeting, and at least they're committing one way. Is one thought.
Yeah. And, you know, after that missed call on St. Louis, I believe it was in game 5 or game 4 or something like that.
Game 5, yeah.
Game 5, that was on that trip on a cherry. That was a big deal, that missed call. So you knew something was going to happen. And I listened to Hockey Central at noon the next day. And I believe it was Doug McClain or John Shannon said Doug Armstrong, the GM for St. Louis, had a very, let's just say, colorful call to guys like Colin Campbell and about the officiating, and it didn't go well. It wasn't too nice. A lot of the vulgar terms being used. And I don't think that's going to cost, or not Doug Armstrong. I think it was, Don Sweeney or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a missed call in one of the games, Declare or something. Fuck. Let's just scratch that though. Not Doug Armstrong, Don Sweeney. So, that's what I heard. If I could convey the information better, maybe it's not as confusing, but I heard Don Sweeney wasn't too happy, and we saw Cam Neely wasn't too happy either, throwing shit at the wall. But I like that they're finally, like you're saying, committing to something. It's better than nothing, because, you know what I mean? You need to fix it up somehow, because that's BS if it costs somebody a series, which I don't think it'll cost Boston.
So we'll know by the end of tonight who's the winner of the Stanley Cup, finally. It's been going on for so long now, and it's been, to me, a bit of an uninteresting series. But, yeah, it'll all be wrapping up this evening.
Yep, and then the fun stuff starts, the off-season. Yeah.
So we were talking either last episode or the episode before about James Holzhauer on Jeopardy, and he has recently finally lost, and it was against a librarian, I believe, and she played an incredible game, and I think he said, I'm happy to know if I lost, it was because someone had to have a perfect game to beat me. Mm-hmm. And now there's a whole bunch of conspiracy theories. It's like someone tweeted, I think James Holzhauer lost Jeopardy on purpose today. His daughter wanted him to come home, and the thank you card she made Alex Trebek sends us the biggest lesson of all: money isn't everything. And then James Holzhauer actually replied to that tweet. It's like, sure, I could stick around and play a game that pays me $150,000 an hour, but I'd really rather get toys thrown at my crotch for free. But yeah, like, incredible run, set so many records. Like, I think owns 23 of the top 27 single day records for Jeopardy earnings. Which is just insane. And I think almost all of his wins, except maybe two or three, were runaways. Like, could have bet zero in Final Jeopardy and still won.
Yeah, which is pretty insane. And, you know, I just hate the conspiracy theories, though, because it takes away from the person that beat him. Because I was a well-played game, and she deserved all the credit for what she did, because that was awesome, like he said. And now I personally think, you know, he's going to be one of the best, him and Ken Jennings.
Yeah, and yeah, Ken Jennings basically made a career out of being on Jeopardy, and I think James Holzhauer is going to do something very similar. Like, he'll probably go, I think he and his wife are planning on traveling around the world. She has a major, maybe master's in history or something. I don't know all the details. But they're going to go around and travel and visit places and just all that good stuff. And he's a sports bettor. He bets on professional sports teams. And yeah, but we'll likely go back to Vegas, where he's from, and just keep doing what he was doing.
Yeah.
I know the Vegas Golden Knights, because he's from Vegas, they congratulated him on his run after he got eliminated, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him at games and then people like have the camera zoom in on him and stuff like that. And we'll see him around the hockey games, and yeah, just keep betting like he was, and what made him so good at Jeopardy.
Yep. And I'm glad he's going to take some time to travel with his wife and kids, because, like, you know what I mean? Celebrate. You don't see that every day on Jeopardy, and I'm glad that he had the run he had. And with the, you never know. Like, a lot of people are saying, maybe, like we were talking about on some previous episodes, his analytics knowledge might help him get a career in some in working for a sports team, whether it's a baseball team, football team, whatever, right? So that's all these cool stuff to think about, too.
Yeah. And right now, E3 is going on currently, the Nintendo Direct. E3 was yesterday. They had quite a few announcements. I'm a huge Nintendo fan myself. I play Super Smash Bros. Melee competitively. I'm a bit of a nerd like that. And Smash Ultimate's always fun. I try to, like, be good at that one, but I just absolutely suck at Ultimate.
Same here. Same crowd.
But having Banjo-Kazooie announced, and the Dragon Quest characters are great. They're coming as DLC in summer and fall this year, so I know a lot of people really wanted Banjo, and even my friends were just like, Banjo or Riot. And so yeah, he's coming to Smash as the third DLC character. And I'm actually quite excited for some of the other games. They have Pokemon, they touched on Pokemon Sword and Shield a little bit, but not too much because they held a Pokemon Direct not too long before it. So they have like all these new features like Dynamaxing and what I think is a really cool looking region. So I'll definitely be playing that myself as well.
Same here.
Yeah, nerd out a little with that. Luigi's Mansion 3 will be, I'll be excited to play. I never played 1 or 2, but I definitely will play number 3 there. It's been, always been, like, the first one was critically acclaimed. It's incredible. And same with Link's Awakening being remade. Legend of Zelda fans absolutely love that game, and it being remade will, it'll do well in sales at very least.
And not to mention, they're working on a sequel to Breath of the Wild, which will be really fun. Like, obviously, it's early in development, as they said. But still, hey, it's something to look forward to. Just like the new Animal Crossing that'll be coming out March 20th, 2020. So it will be something, that'll be something. I never really played Animal Crossing, but I know Nintendo fans love it, and I'm looking forward to trying it out myself.
Yeah, and yeah, I absolutely loved Breath of the Wild. I played a couple Legend of Zelda games as a kid, like Spirit Tracks and on the DS. Like, I had a DS and Wii, and that was my newest system for quite a while as a kid. So I played a bit of Skyward Sword, and whichever the other game was for the DS. I forget what it's called. Phantom Hourglass, that's it. I was going to say it has the Temple of the Ocean King, but yeah, I played those games as a kid a little bit. Never finished any of them. Wasn't a huge fan, so I'm going back and I'm playing through them all right now. I finished Skyward Sword, finished Breath of the Wild. Finishing up Twilight Princess now. Going back and after this, going to play Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. After that, I'll sort of figure out where I'm going from there. Probably play the Link's Awakening remake. And probably need to play Wind Waker at some point. But yeah, I've just been loving them as a 20-year-old man now. I still, like, I absolutely love the games.
Same here. They're fun to play. And, you know, I think people used to call people that played The Legend of Zelda nerds. But if you think about it, everybody now always seems to want a Nintendo Switch. And what's the first game they want to buy? Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And now they see why we love the Legend of Zelda series and just Nintendo games in general for so long.
And Ocarina of Time is like widely considered one of the best games ever made, if not the best game ever to some people. I think maybe Metacritic has it ranked as the number one game of all time, or at very least number two. Just everyone absolutely loves it. And I'm actually quite excited to play it. Like, I already know what happens in the games, watching videos on YouTube, watching speed runs of it, all that kind of stuff. Watching the Any% speed runs, all that. And yeah, I'm excited to play through that. And I know my one friend, Dylan, he absolutely loves Majora's Mask. It's his favorite Legend of Zelda game, and I think second favorite game of all time. So I'm excited to play both.
I'm sure you will be. And you should let us know on the next podcast how you enjoyed them once you played them, of course.
Yeah.
And what I should say right now, do you have a Switch?
I do.
So, this is something we should maybe offer out to our fans. If you want to, you know, test your skills in Smash Brothers Ultimate, hit us up. Maybe we can get a game going. Get some fan interaction. Talk to us about the podcast. Tell us what you want to hear more of, what you don't like. And just give us some feedback and, you know, strut your stuff against us. Because I'm sure you'll have an easy time with me. I'm not that great. But I'll make anybody look bad at Mario Kart any day of the week. So,
yeah, DMs are open on Twitter for both our personal accounts as well as our podcast account. Yeah, hit us up if you ever want to play a match, or if you want to talk to us about the podcast, tell us what you want to hear, tell us what you want to see done with it, and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that does it for today's podcast. Thank you guys for listening. Oscar, do you have anything you want to add?
No. Hope everyone enjoys the outcome of the Stanley Cup Final, and hopefully it's not a bad call that determines the winner.
I agree, and hopefully the Raptors do it in six, because I don't know how the seventh game's going to go. So let's just be positive and enjoy the nice weather out there. Hopefully it's nice weather wherever you're listening from. Cheers, people.
You're tuned in to Last Word Radio. Last Word on sports.com. And that is the last word.